This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:05 in the evening, and for our first story of the hour, we'll be talking about the experiences of disabled people while traveling. This is after an article on Quartz highlighted the difficulties and higher costs for people with disabilities to travel.
Yeah, so when we talk about accessibility at tourist sites or hotels or airplanes, we usually think about wheelchair access. But there are different types of disabilities that require different forms of accessibility. So, for example, the V&A Museum in London provides induction loops for deaf, for people with hearing disabilities, and drinking bowls for guide dogs and elevators on every floor.
So traveling can be very costly for those with disabilities. For example, when flying, long-haul flights on economy class is awful for people with arthritis or a vascular disease. So they have to fly business class, which can cost four times more. And the perks of luxury travel are usually basic necessities for people with disabilities.
And then the amount of research that has to go into finding accommodation and a place where accessibility to destinations, to transport, etc., is not easy. Mm-hmm. And so it often has to come down through word of mouth. But this story has relevance on so many levels, because there's not just the difficulty for people, say Malaysians, traveling overseas. There's also the difficulty of people coming to Malaysia. Mm. I mean, we put so much talk into Malaysian tourism, mm-hmm. but we make very little effort in designing a landscape that is actually accessible. And we don't build hotels, etc., and just accommodation that would make accessibility a basic necessity. You just design it in the first place.
Yeah, and it's important, especially considering next year is Visit Malaysia Year 2020. So accessibility for tourists with disabilities is one of the things that we can consider part of the strategy to attract more tourists in Malaysia. So I'm thinking of some of the museums or tourist attractions that I visited recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm just recollecting from memory. So I know that, for example, in Balai Seni Lukis, they have the spiraling thing in the middle, which is accessible for people on wheelchairs, and they even provide lifts as well. And in the galleries, there are several places where they provide seats. So for people who cannot be on their feet for a long time, there are seats provided. But I'm not sure about things like, induction loops or water bowls for guide dogs or things like that. And also in terms of public transport, I know that our MRT is also is accessible for people with wheelchairs, because they provide lifts and also the platform is on the same level as a train as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only just getting to the destination itself, right? Just having to figure out whether just the mental arithmetics that you need to do just to plan your trip can take a lot more effort. It might just take twice as long to plan a holiday from just thinking about how you're going to get to the destination, whether it has wheelchair access, whether if you're traveling internationally, whether you can bring your medical devices or your medicine along, and whether or not you need to bring a doctor's letter to accompany that device. And all the way to hotels, right? If they have lift access, the kinds of fridges that they have and the kinds of bedding, the kinds of furnishing available. And sometimes if that information isn't available online, then you got to call them. You got to call the hotels and check, hey, do you have this available? Because, and then you have to, you know, reveal like your disability to them. Like, hey, I have this, and do you cater specifically to this? So there is a lot of work that needs to be done just to have, you know, that leisure time.
Mm, mm. And also, I was talking about hotel... I'm sorry,
tourist attractions
here, and I would ask you all when you walk around, mm-hmm. to look out for that one single step. You'll be going to office buildings, you'll be coming out of a toilet, say, and you'll notice there is one step, one unnecessary step, and immediately the entire building is out of bounds,
unaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the challenges that we've faced in Japan recently, when because Japan is hosting the Olympics next year, and there was a bit of a controversy regarding the hotels not being accessible for wheelchair users because the doors weren't wide enough. So it was also a matter of, just because they were built so many years ago without the without these kind of considerations in mind. So I wonder if in Malaysia, if we do face that kind of situation as well.
So you can let us know your thoughts if you do have special requirements for you while you're traveling. You can let us know how your experiences have been with that. Call 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking to Aisha Roos, interior designer at the Aubergine Design Collective and a universal accessibility enthusiast. We'll be right back. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:13. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam. We are talking about how it's like to travel as a person with disabilities. This is after an article on Quartz highlighted the difficulties as well as the higher costs for travel when it comes to travel. So we're now going to cross over to Aisha Roos, an interior designer at the Aubergine Design Collective and a universal accessibility enthusiast. Sha, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
No worries. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi, hello.
So perhaps just to start out, could you describe what your disability is?
Okay, I have this thing called spinal muscular atrophy, and August is Spinal Muscular Atrophy Awareness Month, which is great.
So what do you require to just to get around?
I use a travel scooter, which is a motorized scooter. It's a three-wheeler, so it's not that great when it comes to balance if I take a corner too fast. But generally, if there's a step, it's a no-go for me.
So what resonated most with you in reading this article? Have you had similar experiences in traveling that you can share with us?
This article is just great throughout, and I'm just reading through it and going, oh, so they finally realized that disabled people also have income and can spend. We've finally become that part of the community that is useful to a capitalist society, suddenly. And also, I think it's more because the baby boomers are starting to get older, and they're also feeling the pain of a not accessible environment. But this is just not even the tip of the iceberg, I feel. There's so much to touch on.
And what sort of things do you usually have to consider when you make travel plans?
Cost is one. I'm a big budget traveler. Time is another one. I've never actually traveled or planned for a travel that's like within a month. Everything is done within like before 6 months of the actual travel date. I will be calling up hotels. I'll be liaising with the airlines, because for a long time, having a lithium-ion battery scooter or mobility device means you can't travel on certain airlines. And for a large amount of that time, AirAsia was a no-go, which was annoying. And AirAsia, being one of those big budget airlines, you had to buckle down and go to MAS, which is so much more expensive. What else?
Well, in the article, it mentioned, I mean, they had vascular disease issues, and they needed to lie down flat. So they had to buy business class tickets, which cost four times more than the economy class. Have you had to spend more in terms of the flights?
Thankfully, no, because I don't need to lie down. But what I do have to consider is things like going to the bathroom, because some airlines, the smaller planes, don't have wheelchairs for inside the cabin, which means I don't pee for 8 hours, which is amazing. That's a superpower.
Are there certain things that you've had to compromise on or sacrifice entirely because of a lack of access? And this happens even in between travel or when you are at a destination already?
In the destination itself, access to general hotels, locations, restaurants that I want to go to try out might not be accessible. Things on the first floor generally. And it's always good to have somebody there sort of to take you around if you're, you know, disabled, so that they can be like, oh, yeah, no, you kind of don't want to go to this area because it's dangerous or it has steps or they're not disabled friendly or they kind of consider for you the struggles that you might have. So you always have to have somebody there, which is a pain.
Mm-hmm. Has there been a city or a country that you feel has been the best at making spaces and attractions accessible for everyone?
Yes. Okay. So I was in Melbourne for 4 years. I was doing my studies there in RMIT. And even, like you mentioned Japan just now, even Japan doesn't have that amount of accessibility when it comes to universal access. The only problem that I remember was getting on and off certain trams, but getting around the city, getting around some of the suburbs, getting into trains was super easy. The only thing you really had to worry about was rain.
And just a sideways track here, if you would compare that to your experiences in Kuala Lumpur, have you taken public transport in KL?
I'm actually afraid to take public transport because I don't know that, okay, if I go on the train in New Central, right? Yeah, it's accessible, but how do I know the stop that I want to get at is accessible? There's no way for me to actually communicate with the people because if I do ask them, it's always, we don't know, we're going to have to get back to you, and they never get back to me. And then first mile, last mile is a big problem because there's no point in me getting into a cab and then getting out of a cab with that cab having to take apart, put back my wheelchair or scooter to get into a train and then to get back into a cab. Might as well just take a cab the whole way, which is expensive. So yeah, when it comes to access in KL, in Malaysia, it's just a lot harder. Pavements, I don't think it's accessible to even older people or people with pram.
So there are a growing number of travel sites dedicated to the needs of travellers with disabilities. Have you ever used these services? And if so, what has the experience been like?
No, I actually have not. My family, when we travel, either my brother or I will do the planning. So we haven't actually looked at any other websites because they always, it's never enough. They don't have a rating system, a scaling system that fits. It's always like this very general question, is this place accessible? But it doesn't outline, does it have ramps? Does it have ways for blind people to get in? Does it have ways for deaf people to order? Does it have disabled toilets, which is really important?
And in terms of hotels, can you explain what kind of research you need to do before booking a room in a hotel?
Usually I would go on the internet, I would go on Airbnb, and then first I would look for hotels that is within the budget range. And then I would go through hotels that have disabled rooms. That's really important. And then I have to call the hotel to double check if the disabled room is what it says on the sticker. Because sometimes they say it's disabled friendly, but you know, there's a lot of problems in that room itself that says otherwise.
Right. So you noted in the article how finally people are realizing that disabled people are part of the economy and it is an economy, it is a market. But have you felt over the years, do you think, have you experienced things getting better? Is there an increase in understanding in different locations of the needs of the disabled?
It's a slow progress, but I feel, I guess, in Malaysia itself. It also helps that there's a lot of advocacy groups that have made themselves known. And there's a lot of picketing going, we want ramps, we want disabled toilets, just randomly. And we have establishments that listen to us when we bring up these opinions and needs. For example, I'm going to plug 28 Fireplace in Pasiran Ampang, because they're amazing that way. I have asked for a ramp, and they're building a ramp now. So something as simple as that. Or I think municipalities need to take a bigger step when it comes to doing this, because really it's their job to make everything accessible and safe, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really see it. PJ has done a lot of good things in that their pavements are accessible. They have ramps on the pavements, which isn't like, you know, a pretend ramp or something for the X Games. But here it's still, I don't understand. We're supposed to be the capital city. Where is it?
You know, I think for me, what really rubs me the wrong way is that it has to be some sort of, as you said, it has to be some sort of X Games thing. It has to be something that is so special and so visible for you to access certain things, for you to get certain services that are basically just basic rights for everyone, right? And yeah, it's just such a spectacle, and it shouldn't have to be a spectacle, really.
Mm-hmm. That's true, that's true. It's not just really for people with wheelchairs. It's for the aged. It's for people with babies. Mm-hmm. So it really benefits a whole swath of society instead of just, oh, it's for disabled people. No, it's universal accessibility for a reason.
Cha, thank you so much for those insights.
No worries.
That was Aisha Roos, interior designer at the Aubergine Design Collective and a universal accessibility enthusiast. You can let us know if you share those experiences. Call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us in at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.